Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. The Washington Report.
Money FM 89.3. It is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now to take a look at some key headlines out from the United States. We'll talk about this one. Iran launching attack drones and missiles against Israel on Saturday night local time. This in retaliation for an airstrike in Syria that killed a top Iranian general. 300 drones and missiles fired at Israel overnight. Almost all weapons were shot down by Israeli, U.S. and allied forces before they reached the targets. So now that the Middle East is on high alert with the threat of open warfare erupting between Iran and Israel, what is the risk of the United States being dragged into it? On the line with me is Dr. John Donaldson, Associate Professor of Political Science, School of Social Sciences at the Singapore Management University. Dr. John, good afternoon. How are you?
Great, Elliot. How are you?
Not too bad, sir. And quite a few headlines to talk about today, especially over the weekend, that missile attack and retaliation. This region is already reeling from the Hamas attacks, and the Israeli retaliation on Gaza is being rocked again. The United States seems to be pulled into the picture. How do you see the tensions, the relationship being pushed to the limit?
Yep, this one's big. We're on the brink of one of the scenarios that we most feared, which is if this war between Hamas and Netanyahu, expands into a more regional war. This has already been, in many ways, a proxy war with Iran behind the scenes supporting Hamas in Gaza. But with the Israeli attack on Iran's consulate in Syria, and then now this huge attack of drones and missiles, I mean, it's just a threat of escalation, and a lot depends upon Netanyahu's ability to respond, but to respond in a constrained way.
President Joe Biden from the United States has reiterated support for Israel in a call with the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu amid reports that he's opposed to a counterattack against Iran. I feel there's a little bit of inconsistency there. Am I barking up the right tree here?
You heard Charlie in the background. Very sorry about that. Inconsistency, Biden's response has always been on a tightrope. And that tightrope is, how do you support Israel, which has long been the U.S.'s key ally in the Middle East? That's a consensus among Democrats and Republicans of support for Israel. But at the same time, number one, with Israel's response being against Hamas being so shocking with all of the civilian deaths, and number two, with a threat of an expanding war, this tightrope my analogy is going to break down, but it's just getting tighter. And there's not a good safety net underneath Joe Biden as he tries to walk it.
So as far as the United States being mediator in the Middle East, is that now at stake? For lack of a better choice of words, Doctor, the United States now kind of has skin in the game?
Yeah, actually, I think the U.S. has always had skin in the game. The Democrats, Biden especially, as many top Democratic leaders have emphasized, have long hoped for a two-state solution. As long as that solution to the problems between Palestine and Israel has been on the table, the U.S. has been able to be a mediator. I don't think the U.S. has been able to position itself as a mediator, especially since that two-state solution is really not a realistic one, at least not right now. And therefore, I think the U.S. has now become just the most powerful outside party in this conflict, but mediator probably not. And then the question is, it just threatens to increase U.S. involvement. And when push comes to shove, there's no doubt in anyone's mind that the U.S. would support Israel. But then the question becomes, how far will Netanyahu respond? And if Netanyahu's response is disproportionate, and he's shown he's quite willing to respond to threats very disproportionately, then the U.S. could be drawn into a conflict that is not of its making. And so the U.S. is very concerned about warning Netanyahu about this, but there's very little the U.S. can do.
Okay, talking about warnings, right? So obviously Iran not heeding President Biden's warning not to attack. And you just mentioned what Israel needs to do or what they should pay attention to, but the likelihood of them even listening to that. I mean, obviously, there is emotion thrown into all of this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the events of last year with the shocking attack of Hamas on Israel, they're continuing to, you know, hold hostages. Their, you know, allegations of using human shields and civilian targets, all of those, you know, the Israelis continue to point out are reasons why Israel's shocking response in many ways is not Israel's own choice. To the extent, I mean, that's an argument. Hamas, of course, argues back, and the world looks on at this growing humanitarian crisis with innocent people, you know, in between. It's extremely difficult. War is never beautiful, but then it's always ugly. It's always very, very tragic. And then the question is there anything anybody can do to make this not a widening war? And unfortunately, the only person who can do that right now is Netanyahu. Other people can be influential, but, you know, Netanyahu has shown he's very willing to pave his own path.
All right. U.S. Speaker Mike Johnson said the House will vote this week on aid for Israel in the wake of Iran's attack. Dr. John, I'd like to talk a little bit about details of this package. And I can't help but think, and this has been going on for a while, what does it mean for the Ukraine aid?
That's a really good question. All of this has gotten really world attention away from the Ukraine crisis. And, you know, traditionally the Republicans have been very suspicious of Russia. But recently with Trump's ascendance, that hasn't been so. The Republicans have been very reluctant to, especially the far right among the Republicans, to pass an aid package for Ukraine. Most mainstream politicians argue that unless the U.S. and other allies support Ukraine, that Putin's aggression will, you know, pay off. And that would be a huge problem for stability in Eastern Europe. Mm. All of these things have been, what do you call it, overshadowed by this crisis in the Middle East. And, you know, Johnson wants to support Israel. I think every American wants to support, most Americans want to support Israel. That's pretty much a consensus. But what's going to happen with this aid to Ukraine, which desperately needs it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's switch tracks slightly and talk about this one. There's been quite a bit of debate, legal wrangling. It's been a year plus. The first proceedings of the criminal trial involving Donald Trump began in New York City today. In fact, the trial may end up being the only case to wrap up with a verdict before the November election. And you can't help but wonder, how would that verdict ultimately affect the election going up, since we expect Donald Trump to challenge President Joe Biden for that presidency?
We have to get there first. Unfortunately, you know, from the position of, you know, Donald Trump's, you know, opponents, this is actually probably the weakest case among the four. What he's being accused of in New York is a crime. I mean, he was, you know, it's, what do you call it, falsifying documents. But normally that's a misdemeanor and not a felony. It's only a felony if you're falsifying records to hide another crime. So a New York attorney has to prove that there's another crime going on. And the crimes that he is trying to show were going on, at least one of them is not even a New York state law. It's a federal law. So it's an extremely complicated case. A lot of people would argue this is not as big a deal as, you know, some of the other things that he's accused of, but it happens to be the case that has successfully gone forward. The disaster from the Democrats' point of view is if Trump is acquitted in the only trial, as you say, that's likely to go up before November. And if Trump wins, his ability to crush the other cases and not allow them to go forward is extremely high. Nobody wants a sitting president. In fact, it's not possible to put a sitting president into a trial. All those cases would be put on hold. And the federal trials, the two federal charges, would be completely quashed by a justice system that is led by a Trump appointee. And so this is the only game in town. But unfortunately, from the point of view of Trump's opponents, this is actually the least likely case to succeed. And then if he is convicted, imagine all of the appeals, on and on. So this will be something we'll be talking about for quite a long time.
It's an interesting one when you look at this. And Dr. Donaldson, I mean, you spend time in Singapore and you see how high a priority we place integrity on our parliamentary leaders, right? But you look at this one, if let's say even if he's convicted or things go back and forth, that whole ideology of questioning the integrity of a president should he win, it's a bit weird when you look at the election coming through. So what is the best case scenario that, say, he gets convicted? Is there even at all a possibility that he might not be allowed to run for election?
I mean, you're right. I've lived in Singapore for 18 years. But even in America, you know, when Nixon, for instance, the accusations against him and he resigned, these kinds of things, any normal politician would be too ashamed to run. And if he did, the voters would not pay much attention because of the, you know, the standards of losing a trial. The evidence has to be extremely high. You know, for voters, it shouldn't be that high. But still, he is well poised for this next election. Unfortunately, we're in unprecedented ground. We've even had, you know, minor candidates run for president from jail. There's nothing in the Constitution that would allow, you know, disallow that. And so then the question becomes, what will happen if he's convicted? He still runs. Even, and if he wins, you know, the constitutional questions there will be huge. At the same time, during all of this, there is no best case scenario in, that I can see, because the U.S. already looks pretty ridiculous throughout all of this issues. The credibility of the U.S., even though it does have a sterling judicial system, it just it looks awfully tarnished.
I mean, to be fair, it was U.S. legal dramas that got me interested to study law to begin with. It's unfortunate that we're having this conversation about the system right now, Dr. John. And I wonder, though, it gets a bit Hollywood when the trial gets underway. So far, President Biden kind of mostly shying away from making any direct comments on Trump's criminal cases. But hey, this is going to be a political tool when the election season comes around.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years ago when you were young, if Hollywood came up with this scenario, it would be dismissed as just too outlandish, right? And yet here we are. And so what, you know, what is that future going to be? And then, you know, the judge in this case is actually well known as being a hard-nosed, no-drama kind of a judge. But the drama is going to come to him. There's no avoiding it. And, you know, that's also going to, there's going to be a lot of light, but there's going to be even more heat. And for observers, is how do you get an understanding of the case while ignoring all of the drama that's, you know, that's around it?
Yeah, for sure. Certainly, definitely a lot that will be studied in the field of geopolitical analysis as we get to November, even January. I've been speaking with Dr. John Donaldson, Associate Professor of Political Science, School of Social Sciences, Singapore Management University. Dr. John, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Elliot. I appreciate it.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.